Welcome to the Select Sires Podcast.
Talking your success, our passion.
Starting in 3, 2, 1.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Jolpa Norwood. We've spoken quite a bit recently on the focus on longevity and breeding for the healthier, longer-living dairy cow. But as a result, what traits should I use to place a strong emphasis on profitable genetics? Does an emphasis on health traits adversely affect production traits? And is this actually making a profitable difference in my herd? So many questions, but not to worry, because we're reaching back to our Q&A series in a discussion with Chuck Sattler, Vice President and Manager of Genetic Programs at Select Sires, and Dr. Dan Weigel, Director of Outcomes Research for Zoetis, Inc. Select Sires Director of Research, Dr. Bo Harstein, helps to host this discussion, and we'll get to that in a second, but first, it's time for today's highlight of the podcast. Jersey Development Manager Herbie Lutz joined us last episode to discuss the exciting sexed-only options in the Jersey breed. Today, he's back to continue on the Jersey discussion. Herbie?
Hello, I am Herbie Lutz, the Jersey Development Manager for Select Sires, and we as a sire team are extremely excited to bring you an offering of Jersey genetics for all member owners and breeders of the Jersey breed. No matter what your desire, we try to have a sire to match what you are looking for. Maybe it's high-ranking proven results like Kestrel P or Stony, or maybe bulls that make the kind you like to see every day, like Chrome, Matt, Texas, Casino, Victorious, or a new proven star like Pine or Kiowa P and Adama. Or maybe you like more genomic stars like Tucker, Hole-in-One, Geppetto, Alcan, Mahomes, Corsair, Blizzard, Patronus, Pot of Gold, Nicholas, or Kamikaze. Or maybe Pold is your desire. And on top of the ones mentioned earlier, look for Dabo P, Monster P, Skalski P, Hootie P, Goals P, or proven bulls like Oliver P and Iroquois P. Select Sires, Accelerated Genetics, Genervations, and Worldwide Sires strive every day to meet your desires to be the most profitable and long-term sustainable dairies around the world. We appreciate each and every one of your comments and help in building what we think is the most all-around and elite Jersey lineup in the industry.
Thanks, Herbie. As always, more on those sires and many more online at selectsires.com. Now on to our main discussion, led by Dr. Bo Harstein.
Today, our experts will be reviewing traits and indexes to equip your cattle with profitable genetics. Joining me for today's discussion is Chuck Sattler, the Vice President and Manager of Genetic Programs at Select Sires, and Dr. Dan Weigel, the Director of Outcomes Research for Zoetis. Chuck and Dan, thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks, Bo. Glad to be here.
Yes, thanks so much.
Great. Let's get started. Our first question is going to put some of those profitable genetics into perspective. Why is there a need to place a strong emphasis on health traits?
Well, Bo, we're definitely seeing a reduced level of dairy replacements being raised across the industry. So with reduced number of heifers being raised, we're going to see a reduced level of culling in the milking herd. And with a reduced level of culling in the milking herd, we're going to see herds that have more older cows in the herd. So obviously there's trade-offs here that we're dealing with as we're looking at young cows versus older cows. Older cows will definitely milk more, but they'll also have more struggles avoiding things like mastitis and hoof problems and getting pregnant. So we're dealing with some trade-offs here that herd managers deal with all the time, but we I think have some good updates of some economic data to show what the right balance here is. And then we have some updated economic studies from the University of Florida and Dr. Albert DeVries. And Dr. DeVries has been studying the economics of culling for a long time and recently refreshed this study because his thoughts were that we're seeing increased rates of genetic improvement over the years, and he was wondering how this impacted the economics of culling. So he updated this study and included all the important economics of herd replacement costs, included lack of maturity costs or the benefits of increased production as cows get older, included the genetic opportunity cost to look at the value of rates of genetic progress, the fact that our heifers have better genetics than our older cows, and balanced all these kinds of things in the study. And the bottom line here is he found that the optimum culling rate is right at 30%. There's a pretty steady improvement. As you reduce culling rate from 40 to 30%, it gets flattened out there between 30 and 25%. So there isn't much difference, loss or increase in value from changes between those two values. But then if you reduce culling below 25%, you start to see an increase in costs again as you have more and more older cows. Somewhere between 30 and 25% culling rate seems to be the sweet spot. Industry average has come down recently, but is probably somewhere between 35 and 40%. So we definitely have room for improvement there, and definitely economic benefit to reduce culling and reducing the number of younger cows in our herd and moving to a herd with more later lactation cows. So then the question then is, are we breeding the right cows that will be happy with when they're milking in their third lactation? And I think there's definitely some different challenges there when we think about what the cows need to do. And we need to think a little bit less about the cows with high production and a little bit more of breeding for cows that can avoid those health events like mastitis, like lameness, making sure they're getting bred on time, and some other things like twinning and transition metabolic diseases. So I really think that as we work with more older cows, there's definitely more value, and we need to put more emphasis on selecting for those health traits.
All very relevant points. Dan, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think Select Sires and Zoetis both share a common thing. We spend a lot of time working with our customers on the farm, analyzing their data. We're seeing the same things, right? I mean, repro is really, really improved. I mean, you guys, I don't know if it's you or, you know, the systems or whatever, but I'm seeing 40% preg rates now. Who would ever dreamt of that? I mean, I remember when 13 was okay. You know, so it's tremendous differences there. And again, as repro increases, well, then now other things are more important is for reasons the cows are leaving. And again, strong. Again, I'm a quantitative guy. I really like numbers. You know, that's kind of a soft word. Strong, I mean, certainly production is a big part of our index of dairy wellness profit dollars. And again, we put a fair amount of emphasis on some of the health traits. I mean, and I'm not a person that really, as many of you know, likes individual indexes for herds. You know, I analyze a lot of data. Everybody has kind of the same issues. I mean, I remember years ago we launched the calf health traits, and one producer said, yeah, I just built a new barn. He said, I'm not really treating calves anymore. I don't think I need that. Well, okay, 5 years go by. I analyze the data the other day. He's treating a fair number of calves. So, you know, those same pressures, problems are always on all the dairies we have. Probably the one exception would be, lameness does seem to be lower in robotic barns. If you're a herd that's completely robotic, I would probably entertain reducing the incidence of lameness a little bit. But again, Chuck hit on the head, mastitis is, and again, strong. Well, certainly, I think it should be more than one, you know, less than 1% of the index. I mean, that's, I mean, especially if you're a Jersey breeder. I mean, if you're not paying attention today, that breed has a fair amount of mastitis in it. And if you're not paying attention today, you can select for some Jersey bulls or top of some lists that are really bad for mastitis. And that's not what anybody wants.
Very good information, Dan. And I heard you mention lameness in that. And so that leads us right into our second question. Why should producers place more emphasis on Zoetis' lameness than other traits like feet and leg composite?
Yeah, I think that is definitely a timely question. I think traditionally, when we've thought about breeding for longevity, we thought about things like selecting for improved udders and improved feet and legs. And we certainly have a lot more genetic tools to work with today that can help us breed longevity. And it's probably appropriate for us to rethink some of those traditional approaches that we've used in the past. We've done some studying of the foot and leg traits here, and what we like to do is to look back at the performance of our bulls. And so we assembled a set of genetic evaluations on high reliability bulls, bulls that have more than 100 daughters in their productive life proof. And we also included only those bulls that we had Zoetis health trait evaluations for. And the reason we'd like to do this is this way we can look at those bulls that have real daughter performance information, some real daughter data to tell us how those daughters are doing and how they're lasting in the herds. That produced a file of about 700 bulls, so a pretty comprehensive and historical perspective to look at. And then we looked at the correlations in the genetic evaluations of those bulls, comparing the longevity measures, productive life, livability, and a combined value of production and productive life that we called lifetime combined fat and protein production, and correlated them to the foot and leg traits for those same bulls. Again, with correlation values, those values can range from anywhere from -1 to +1, with a zero value that shows no relationship between the two traits, and the values that are closer to one would show a strong relationship between the two traits depending on the direction. So when we look at the traditional conformation traits, the foot and leg composite and the foot and leg score, what we're seeing is values that are fairly close to zero for foot and leg composite, and maybe even slightly negative, -0.1. And for foot and leg score, we're seeing correlations of about -0.2, which says that there isn't a much relationship between these conformation traits and longevity. And if there is, it might be a little bit unfavorable in that the bulls we think are siring better feet and legs, that might be a little bit counterproductive. But then when we look at the new trait, the lameness trait from the Zoetis evaluations, we're seeing positive correlations, a little higher value, more in the 0.25 range. And that gives us a little more confidence that including that the lameness trait in our selection programs will actually help us avoid some of those hoof health and lameness problems and assist those cows in achieving a longer productive life and more lifetime production. So I think this is very telling. We have lots of traits to select for in our breeding program, and in this day and age, can't really afford to spend a lot of time to select for things that don't have a clear benefit. And typically, I think the other key point here is typically we're going to do better when we directly measure and select for the things that we're really trying to change. So a trait like lameness, where we can observe it and measure it directly in our herds and then select for it, we're going to be a little more effective than if we're looking for a conformation trait that is indirectly related to improving what we're trying to achieve. And in this case, that would be improved hoof health and better mobility. So lameness, hoof health is an issue on most dairies, especially as cows get older. And this is some good news to hear that shows that the Zoetis lameness trait is really helpful at addressing that issue.
Very good news. Very helpful. And I think our third question that I'm going to go into is going to be very relatable to our producers. So if I gain these evaluations on my animals, do the high-ranking animals actually deliver the extra profit promised by these indexes? And where does this increase in lifetime profit come from?
Well, absolutely, this is a huge question for us, right? I mean, so genomic testing is expensive. I mean, producers want reassurance that what they're spending their money on is worthwhile. And again, we're lucky, as well as we can go to them right away and say, well, look at these calf health traits. Those are working. We can show back the scours and the respiratory disease and a little bit of the mortality, right? They tend not to test all the dead calves, but Yes, and then we can look at heifer conception rate, because they start, sending us those checks and they wonder. And then, invariably you can come back a year later and look at tritus and daughter stillbirth and a few other things. And again, I think Select does the same thing with our genetic audits. We show how well these traits are working. And we had heard that, metritus was too high. And clearly it wasn't the heifers. It was them. And the next year they were better. So that's what it's all about. But again, the big one is lifetime profitability and productive life. How does this productive life thing work? It's really hard for people to get their head around it. We can predict that. So, again, we had a study that we did published last year. People may have been something going on that they may have missed it, but we published it. And so, again, we went out to herds, and these were customers who were paying to test their animals with us. And it was five different herds, about 2,200 heifers across the five herds. And what we did is we went back and calculated our predictions with only information that was available when these heifers were heifers. Again, the only, because we wanted to send out, you know, get something as close as possible what we're sending out today on heifer calves, right? The only exception would be livability, which, you know, CDC be added later. We couldn't go back in time and get that. So again, this is as close as we could come to as a heifer calf production prediction, and we rank the animals within each herd on this Dairy Wellness Profit Dollar Index. And then we looked at their data. You know, they're born in 2011. Their careers are pretty much over at the time we did the study. And again, for a young guy like you, Bo, this is probably no big deal. But for an old guy like me, this was science fiction when I was your age, right? I mean, that we could go out to a herd and say, okay, this is your bottom 25%. And we look across these five herds. Again, most economics say cows need to make 50,000 pounds of milk to break even. Well, you can probably look at that total of 54,000 and say, well, girls weren't that profitable, right? They paid the bills, they kept the power on, but did they gain us anything? Not really. The best group, almost 20,000 pounds more milk. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Again, productive life. We predicted these calves, cows, the difference between the top and the bottom would be 4 months. And we actually got 6.6 months. And again, this is where indexes get real tricky. You know, why did we get more than we predicted? Well, we got these traits like metritis and DPR and lameness and mastitis, and all of those things help predict how long cows will stay in the herd. So again, by weighting that index, we got more productive life than we actually expected. If you go through and do the math, you know, how many days they were in the herd and how much milk did they give? The best group gave on average about 4 pounds more milk per day they were in the herd. Yeah, 4 pounds more than the bottom group. And that was more than we expected. And again, that's because mature cows give more milk. Plus the heritability of milk is just a little bit low. Yeah, some of all those things, how much money did they make? Again, we counted for live calves, all the things you expect, $800 difference between the best and the worst. That's on average. That's an average, every cow in the group of 550 cows. Wow, that's pretty cool. A lot of money there. So, and again, when we dig down this, mastitis goes up with lactation. Again, just to bring this out, it's hard to analyze. Again, we require a cow to stay in the herd for 280 days before we'll say she didn't have mastitis. And you can see there's differences between these groups for how many cows could make it that far. And again, how many have made a second lactation? There's big differences there, dramatic differences in mastitis between those two groups. And again, the first question is, should we strong emphasis on the health traits? And this data says pretty clearly that mastitis is a big deal. And they didn't just cull these cows by gate cutting them, right? Now, pretty clear that these cows left because they had mastitis. And again, as these herds decide to lower their cull rate, you got to wonder, well, how much more mastitis are you going to have when your cows do that, given how much more we see in the later lactations?
Very good information. And hey, money is money. Transcends age of the producer, Dan. Chuck, do you have anything to add?
Yeah, I would just like to say that this is a really cool study, in that the validation of these kinds of indexes is a pretty rare event in the industry. It's a complicated process. It takes, as Dan said, a lot of time for these cows to exhibit their lifetime performance. So it's a really high bar to demand of an index. And I think there's probably only two other national indexes around the world that have gone through this process. And now DWP Dollars is the third one, and certainly gives us and the rest of the industry confidence that the assumptions and thought process behind DWP Dollars makes sense and turns out to be valid in real life situations.
Most definitely, Chuck. And so I'm going to move us on to our last question for this session. And I've heard it from more than one producer, definitely. Does an emphasis on health traits adversely affect production traits?
Yeah, this is an excellent question, and I think it's one that we all struggle with as we put together indexes and selection programs, whether you're an AI stud or a dairy farm. And we just need to remember that we need to breed for the whole cow and use a long-term perspective as we put the traits together. And looking at one trait and ruling out a bull because of that one thing can be a risky thing. So you just need to have the whole perspective. These good health and fertility genetics, I think, actually can allow cows to get past some of those hurdles and really maybe express their production potential to the fullest extent, where if you maybe have a extreme high production bull that has a hole in a health trait or a fertility trait, maybe ends up the daughters having somewhat of a limited life and not fully expressing their production potential. So I like to use an example in our new employee training process that compares two bulls, ones with high PTA production compared to a lower production bull with better health traits. Sacrificing 500, a couple hundred pounds of milk isn't that big of a deal if that animal is able to avoid some health events and last a month or several months longer and with productive life. So with a cow making 100 pounds a day, only takes 30 days to make up 1,000 pounds of production per lactation. So that doesn't take too many extra days or avoiding a lameness event or avoiding a mastitis event for that cow to make up her a small difference in production value in her PTAs.
Definitely. We talked last week, the best cows are the ones you don't notice. No health events popping up. Dan, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you're spot on, Bo. And again, you know, people think that there's a negative correlation there. Well, don't forget, you know, Chuck and I have been around. We take the long view. Correlations change. I mean, look at calving ease and growth. I mean, that's as strong as a correlation you'll ever find. And we broke it in both beef and dairy. So, yeah, we can change these correlations. Absolutely. Again, we're looking at a balanced cow. So we're looking, you know, again, we're using an index. So, again, they can be extreme for different things. They'll be high on the index. I think one of the things that we do, though, is we do penalize these high heifers a little bit in our current system. I was analyzing data for a herd this weekend, and they were complaining, hey, some of their high fertility index cows, especially two-year-olds, really weren't milking as well as they wanted them to. Well, I started digging into the data, and, well, yeah, they got pregnant faster as heifers. And, again, when do we breed our heifers? Well, we breed them so the average heifer gets pregnant on time. So, you know, those heifers calve too young, too small. And it cost them a lot of pounds. And then they got pregnant right away again. Then they didn't abort as much. And again, open cows give a lot more milk than cows that are heifers that are pregnant and still trying to grow. So, I mean, we really kind of, again, the other thing, they were looking at milk. Again, the meter doesn't spin as fast. We're selecting for component. And when you have a high component cow, it really makes a big, big difference. A 3.5 fat Holstein is 12% below the breed average. I mean, that's hard for a lot of people to get in their head. The other thing is, you know, we're an instant gratification society, you know, Twitter and everything, and keeping your head that, hey, I'm putting off, well, we don't want these health events. This is a study we just published in the Journal of Animals, and it looks at the incidence of twins with our predictions across different fertility management protocols. You know, the herd one's utilizing a tag system to breed their cows and very few hormonal interventions. And the herds four and five are using double offspring, which appears, and the federal law says I can't promote that it reduces twins, but it appears to reduce the incidence of twins a little bit. But still, you look at our breed average cow, which is 100, that's 10%, 12% twins on average. Now, it's not, that's something we just want to live with and say, well, that's the way Holstein cows are. Now, Chuck and I remember 10 years ago, heifers had 10, 12% dead calves when they calved. And we just said, well, that kind of sucks. And we put it in our index and we selected for it. And over time, we've made tremendous progress. And now our Holstein heifers have 2% dead calves. Again, I look at these traits. It's not going to be all of our index, but we're going to make progress over time. And the ones that don't have these things are worth more than others. Again, if I ever heard 2-year-olds have 1% twins, twins not a big deal to me. If I ever heard of older cows, twins are a bigger deal.
Awesome information. Very relevant. And you two are doing such a great job of presenting it. Even I understand it. And so with that, Chuck, Dan, thank you both for joining us today. We really appreciate your time and those valuable insights you've given us.
Thanks, Bo. It's been a pleasure.
Great discussions here today, and you can find more on this topic and many more online at selectsires.com. That wraps it up for today's podcast. I'm Joel Penorwood. Thanks for tuning in.